A Weekend with Jason Dacey replay from Money FM 89.3.
This is Money FM 89.3. I'm Jason Dacey alongside our co-host, Mr. Neil Humphreys. And I would like to welcome our special guest today. It is Jerry Cox. He is a singer, songwriter, guitarist, soloist, and he is here because we are marking the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' Abbey Road album. Neil and Jerry, welcome.
Hi, guys.
Good morning, guys.
It's great to have Jerry here. And I'm not going to lie, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Everybody knows my daughter is named Abbey Rose. You know, you can't get a more obvious tribute than that. I named my daughter after this album, for heaven's sake. And I have a personal story very quickly. It was one of the first albums, vinyl record albums, that I remember as a child, because my mother had it and she would have been 16 when the album came out and kept it. And I was always struck by the four guys walking across the zebra crossing as a boy. And I like the back cover. Do you know the back cover is just the street sign?
Yes.
And there's a brief blurred shot of a woman walking past the street sign. So I'd never heard the record. Mm. I just loved the imagery of it as a small boy.
Yeah, it was the 11th studio album by the English rock band The Beatles, which was released in September 1969 on Apple Records. And of course, this was the last one, Jerry, that they all recorded together. Of course, Let It
That's
Be
correct.
Came out in 1970. And this is recognized as probably their greatest album by many, including me. I think it's their greatest album. Although we had Revolver, we had Rubber Soul, and many other popular albums. But for you, it was a masterpiece from a band that was breaking up at the time and could barely talk to each other.
That's right. You had these four guys in the studio who could barely stand to be in each other's company. But it's the sound of a band that's imploding, and they know they're imploding. They know that it's done. It's over. But it strikes me that they, you know, put it that one side and let's just see if we can squeeze one more semi-decent record out of it. And they got, well, it's far more than a semi-decent record, I'm sure you'd agree. Yeah.
Well, that's the extraordinary.
They got a masterpiece out of it.
You're absolutely right, Jerry. That's the extraordinary thing. I mean, they could barely be in the same room together. They were arguing all the time. I mean, Maxwell's Silver Hammer, one of the songs on it. You know, even
the
Ringo
song that broke the Beatles.
Yeah, even Ringo Starr was saying, "If I hear that beep beep song one more time," and he was the placid one, you know. And the idea that they knew, George Martin, the producer, knew, because initially he didn't want to come back because it elbowed him for Let It Be and got in Phil Spector, the famous American producer, and so that upset George Martin, and so he said, "I'll only come back if it's all four of you and you do it properly in the studio and you behave yourselves." And for the most part, they did. And that's extraordinary because, as Jerry says, they knew. And the fact that they even ended it with, you know, "the love you take is equal to the love you make," it's their farewell love letter to the fans.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
Yeah, and it's quite a journey too, because the first sessions for Abbey Road began on the 22nd of February 1969, only 3 weeks after those Get Back sessions that we saw in the Let It Be film, where they're breaking up and they're arguing. And actually in Trident Studios, it wasn't even in Abbey Road Studios, in a different studio. And it kind of was really stretched out. And we had I Want You, She's So Heavy, that was actually recorded soon after that with Billy Preston, who was involved with the Let It Be sessions. Then there was a big break, and they really did a lot in the summer of 1969. And that's when they took that photograph on the Abbey Road crossing on the in the pedestrian crossing. That was, I think, in August 1969. But we're going to analyze the side one first and side two second, because side two has that medley of songs, Neil, that we all love so much. But side one has the great singles: Come Together, of course, Something, Maxwell Silver Hammer, Oh Darling, Octopus's Garden, and I Want You, She's So Heavy. And Jerry, you got your guitar there. Anything that strikes you from that first album that maybe you can give us a little sample of?
Most great albums don't necessarily open with a killer song. You know, they open with an okay song and then they build up to the crescendo of the big hit single. Like for Abbey Road to open with Come Together, it's just great. Like you think about when you're a kid, you put the vinyl record on the turntable and you put the needle on and you're waiting to hear, okay, what's going to come out? And then they come out with this, dum, 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 psh, wow, what's that? You know, and then what I love about Come Together as a song is that when you're singing it, you don't have to know the words. Because it's like, what is he on about? Who knows? But you can just sing anything. I've done it in the pubs where I play, and I just sing whatever comes into my head because I don't know the words. And nobody's ever called me out on getting the words wrong.
A lot of them are drunk as well.
Well, and usually so am I. But like, I'll do things like, he come on flat top, he come grooving up slowly, he drinks pie. pints of Guinness. He supports Aston Villa. He say, I know you, and so on and so forth.
That's brilliant.
I love that.
Can I just ask you though, because this is where Paul McCartney often gets a bad rep for being the soppy one, the sentimental one. But for me, even John Lennon had to acknowledge that Paul makes that song because it's that killer, killer bass
it's
riff.
It's the bass riff.
That's all McCartney. Yeah. Can you just, like, I know you're on an acoustic, but just give us that riff again because it's just fantastic.
Actually, if I drop down.
And like you say, it opens the album. What a killer.
And also his harmony too is great.
Yeah. I mean, that's as swampy and as funky as it gets, right?
You could take everything else out of that track and just leave the vocals and the bass and it would stand.
And it's a double A-side, wasn't it?
I got goosebumps then, by the way.
It was Come Together and Something. We get to Something, George Harrison. And guys, I think I'm going to confess something here.
Go on.
Between the end of 1968 and early 71, I think George Harrison was the most prolific and the most talented and most gifted of the Beatles because he came up with like While My Guitar Gently Weeps that was on the White Album at the end of 68. Then he comes up with Something. He comes up with Here Comes the Sun.
He came up with a three-disc album.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't take his song. All Things Must Pass is an absolute masterpiece.
Old Brown Shoe.
All the songs that should have been on Beatles
albums. And were turned down. Lennon and McCartney turned some of those great songs down.
My Sweet Lord, Give Me Love, Give Me Light, Give Me Peace on Earth, What Is Life, some of the great songs. So I think for that period, George Harrison was incredible. And I guess Something is something that you've probably played on stage, Jerry, as well.
Once or twice I have, not very often. But just talking about Something, it reminds me of a joke that my father told me many years ago, that Something wasn't actually originally George Harrison's song. Something was written by an Irish dairy farmer. And it went, something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover.
I don't love her.
And so on.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And what a song, because Frank Sinatra said that was the best song written over the last 50 years. Frank Sinatra said that about George Harrison.
But you know the full quote, right, that still bothers McCartney. Frank Sinatra would always cover the song, you know, when doing his Vegas thing, and he would always say, that is the best Lennon McCartney song they ever wrote. And Paul McCartney said, I never wrote it, Frank. I never wrote it. It's not my song. But it is by common consensus. They've all said separately, Ringo, Paul, and even John, the stubborn John, have said that that's probably the best song on the album, in the Beatles' opinion. Yeah. You know.
Incredible song. Okay, let's go to the next track, Maxwell Silver Hammer. You mentioned that, a Paul McCartney song that drove everybody crazy, but is a clever, clever song. The reason it drove them crazy, Paul McCartney rehearsed it over and over and over and over and over again. It's a bit like Obladi, the same thing with that song.
Absolutely, and it is the one song on the album that does have that When I'm 64, Paul McCartney sheen.
Granny rock.
It's been, in a sense, no, the way it's been produced.
It's that kind of vaudeville thing.
Yeah, it's been produced within an inch of its life. It has, Paul McCartney has said he was obsessed with the Beach Boys and he was also obsessed with a very clean sound. Like if you listen to songs like Penny Lane, When I'm 64, this in particular, it's a very clean. Whereas Lennon was the opposite. He liked what they call leakage. Yes. He liked overlapping guitars. He liked the swampy messiness of it. And the thing about Maxwell's Silver Hammer, it was my mother's favourite song on Abbey Road. And I only realised years later, it's about a child serial killer.
Yeah.
And that sums up my
mother. I only realised that this week.
I know, it's extraordinary.
You know, when we were messaging each other about doing this show, and I was like, I better have a listen to this album because it's been a while, you know. So I put it on, and you're working on your computer or whatever, you've got music on, and you're hearing the music, but it's a while since I actually actively listened to an album, right? And so I put on Abbey Road, and Maxwell Silver Hammer, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've always liked this one. It's kind of catchy, and it's a bit kind of, you know, vaudevillian, and it's a nice tune. It's a lovely tune. But then I started listening to the lyrics, and I'm like, my God, it's about a serial killer.
Who's a boy?
Who's a little boy?
Yeah. But it's clever. The lyrics are clever. I don't know whether you got an interpretation of that one, or Oh Darling, which is the next track by Paul McCartney on Abbey Road Side 1, which is, I guess, very different, where he kind of gets his voice very hoarse. It's kind of got that bluesy feel to it. It's a bit of they're both 3 minutes and 27 seconds long, both songs. You got any interpretation of either of those songs?
Well, 3:27 is kind of the golden radio length, isn't it? You know, I mean, until Bohemian Rhapsody came along. You're right. Maxwell Silver Hammer, the lyrics are great. You know, they're so great that you don't notice them.
And he builds. He kills the teacher. Then he goes on trial and he kills the judge.
He
goes behind the judge and whacks him on the head.
And of course, the big question that everybody always asked, why was it a silver hammer? And McCartney has gone on record and said, I don't know, it sounded better than Maxwell's Hammer or Maxwell's
it's
Little
good.
Hammer or
it's
something.
It's good.
Going on to the next track that you talked about, Oh Darling. I mean, it's got that classic bluesy rock and roll feeling, and McCartney really gives it some welly on his vocal. You know, it's not kind of nice. You know, it's like, oh, darling, there's an angst in there, you know, and it has that classic. You know, I mean, how many rock and roll songs do you hear that in?
And
let's use that.
And the thing about that song is another example of McCartney sort of destroying that stereotype that he was the clean cut one, because it is a very rocky song, and he came in. I've got an exact date, middle of July 1969. He would come in 30 minutes before everybody else to get the first thing in the morning, that slightly gravelly vocal, because he knew in the middle of the day his voice would get cleaner and purer.
Same thing happens to me, actually. Even on the way in here this morning, I was thinking, voice feels a bit rough, because my voice box generally doesn't start working until about 4:30 in the afternoon.
We're a bit early.
We'll try that riff again and say, oh, darling.
Darling!
See there you go. Perfect.
All right, let's move on to the next song on side one of Abbey Road as we review the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' 11th and probably their greatest album, Octopus's Garden by Ringo. It was a Richard Starkey composition. But I've got a sneaking feeling, guys, that George Harrison helped quite a lot with this song, because we see in the Let It Be film that he's helping with the middle part.
Yeah.
And I think probably Ringo came up with a basic one. I'd like to be under the sea.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, I'm sure George Harrison.
I think Ringo came up with that, and he came up with the concept of the song.
Yes.
I've got this great song. It's about an octopus, you know. And George would have been like, okay, let's do it.
the funny thing about Ringo was, you'd always feel sorry for him, because he would come in with this song and he'd play songs on the drums for obvious reasons, right, while he was singing them. Yeah. So even Octopus's Garden has got a very diddle
it. It does, yeah.
So you could play Octopus's Garden almost just with drums. And according to Ringo, he would bring in these songs and they would just fall about laughing, because he'd rewritten old standards again. He didn't know. He was just, every song he brought in was a rewritten old classic. You know, that's where I think he got the other guys in. Even with his solo albums, a lot of it was with George. And
And I think, you know, the thing about Ringo, I think, you know, Neil and I are probably better the singers than Ringo, and we're not great singers. But the thing about Ringo and the solo career that he had people like George Harrison helping him. So he's got songs like Photograph and It Don't Come Easy, where the whole song's embellished by the production and the harmonies and the fillers.
Yeah, that's right.
And the same thing really with this song. It's such a clever song. And my love of the Beatles was in real time with The Yellow Submarine and Obladi Oblada when I was a kid. And when I was a slightly older kid, I really loved this song, Octopus's Garden, because it's such a visual song.
That's where me and you differ slightly, because obviously you came at it at the right age for those songs. Yeah. That's the one I tend to skip.
Well, if you're 8 years old,
my daughter loves
good.
It. You know, a lot of people like this song.
Octopus's Garden for me, I mean, I was familiar with Octopus's Garden as a song long before I got into the Beatles. The Beatles actually came a bit later in life for me. You know, that musicians always go, oh, yeah, the Beatles were one of my first influences. They weren't. I only got into them after I started learning to play and realised how good their music was. But Octopus's Garden, the first time I heard that, as you said, it was a visual song. It was the Muppets doing it on Sesame Street. and they had, you know, all the octopus puppets and, you know, the whole underwater scene. And I was only, I couldn't have been more than 6 or 7, I suppose, at the
time.
And it stuck in my head. And I knew the song for years. And then later, to find out that Sesame Street song was actually a Beatles song, it blew my head. You know?
I know.
So what is it about that song? Is it?
It's the catchiness of it, and it's the quirkiness of it. And what makes a songwriter go, I think I'll write a song about being an octopus. I don't know where he got the concept from, but it flows well. It's, you know, and it lends itself well to an acoustic guitar, because you can do that kind of, you know, that kind of country thing almost. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He let us in, knows where we've been, to his octopus's garden in the shade. It's just nice.
But
that's
exactly the point. That riff, you could just do that riff again. That was what Ringo kept doing. He kept writing songs that country riff.
Under the sea.
And I can answer the question, because I read he was on Peter Sellers' yacht. He was very good friends with Peter Sellers.
Right.
And they was hanging out on the yacht and they saw an octopus. And Peter Sellers started telling him some stories about what octopuses do. And apparently he wrote the basic lyrics to the song on Peter Sellers' yacht.
That makes a lot of sense.
Talk about a different life.
Yeah. Right? Wow.
Okay, we're going to wrap up side one before we play Come Together, which is on the first track of side one, with another Lennon track. Lennon wasn't at the top of his game at this point of his career. He was very obsessed with Yoko Ono. He had a car accident in the middle of the recording sessions. He was, you know, growing his beard and doing bagism and doing love-ins and peace-ins and all that sort of stuff. So he wasn't that focused, but I Want You, She's So Heavy.
Love this song.
It's a classic.
I love this song. I adore this song. And I read interviews that Lennon did at the time where that's pretty much the lyrics for the whole song, right? I Want You, She's So Heavy. He said if I could do a song with just one word, I would, just to see if it could be done. And anyone who believes sometimes it's not about melody, it's about profound lyrics. Most lyrics to most great pop songs are rubbish. That's by common consensus.
Absolutely. Love me do.
Rubbish. And I've got this...
Well, that was 1961, 62.
My theory on this. I've told him this theory before. A lot of the great pop writers now for One Direction, they're all Scandinavian, like ABBA. And I believe there's something in second language learners. When English is your second language, you can write really good trite pop songs. Yeah. I couldn't write a pop song.
Well, you're Irish. You understand that.
Yeah,
that's true.
See what he's doing.
But I've never written any trite pop songs. I've never written any bad pop songs.
Exactly. But
I've certainly never written any good ones.
But that is my point. This song is, to me, absolutely brilliant. It's all melody. Six words. There's six words in this song. I Want You, See So Heavy. And it's brilliant. I mean, do you play it?
It's not one that I've ever got into myself.
But I love it. I love the way he sings
off at the end too. You know, they've got the organ. Of course, the Moog organ was very big in this period in '69. And
Billy Preston,
and it just cuts off at the end. You know, and that was Lennon all the way through. So we're going to talk about more of Abbey Road shortly, side two. But let's now hear one of John Lennon's best songs from this album, "Come Together."